Welcome to the Solo 2.0 podcast, where two sisters, Jess and Rye, focused on health and hormone balance to help you step into that 2.0 version of you.
Growing up, we heard all about hormones.
Sometimes more than we wanted.
From our mom, who is a hormone health educator.
As we got older, we rebelled and experienced our own health struggles and ups and downs. But today we have businesses helping people get in tune with their bodies, break free from restrictive eating and lifestyle habits, and learn how to balance their hormones naturally. So what can you expect from this podcast?
Honest conversations and hot topics that should be more mainstream, like period health, cycle tracking, non-hormonal birth control, and our unique take on fad diets and trends that aren't always so supportive for women. Plus, interviews with health and wellness entrepreneurs making a big impact in the world.
Ladies, it's time we align with our powers and redefine what healthy means to us.
Let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Solo 2.0 podcast. This is Jess, holistic health coach and founder of Body Bliss by Jess. And in just a few minutes, I'll be joined by my co-host, who's my sister, Rye Birch, and co-founder of our family business, Your Hormone Balance. So today we are having the ultimate pleasure of sitting down with my friend, Amanda Butler, who is not only a beautiful human, she's a fitness professional and now a cancer survivor and true advocate for women. In this episode, she's getting really real and really honest and raw, talking about the reality behind receiving a cancer diagnosis at the height of her life and her career at just 32 years old. And we talk about what it's been like navigating a cancer diagnosis as a healthy, active young person, and what the transition into this quote-unquote new life of constant appointments, treatments, side effects, and of course, emotional ups and downs has been like. We also learn what Amanda wishes she had known before her diagnosis, the power of a positive mindset, which she is all about, and the decision she made to share her entire journey with the world via social media. Amanda has transformed lives through her motivating and love yourself first approach to health and wellness. She's an online and in-person trainer, as well as TikTok content creator, securing her place with leading companies like Amazon Halo, Pop Sugar, Nike, Adidas, Barry's, Fabletics, Shape Magazine, and more. After building an online presence in the fitness world, Amanda was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in September of 2022. She's been documenting her journey and partnering with top cancer organizations to help others who are going through similar health concerns know that they too can face life challenges bravely and with grace, which she absolutely does. She believes that she was put on this earth to help others through her story and messages. And if you give her a follow on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube at Hi Amanda Butler, which is also linked in the show notes, you will see exactly what I mean. And even though this is a heavy topic, Amanda brings a lightness to it through her warmth, resilience, and true passion for helping herself and others to be their own advocates and to spread awareness through conversations and community. So with that said, let's get into the episode. Okay, this has been such a long time coming, and Amanda, we're so appreciative to have you here.
Yay!
So thank you.
Yay! I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes! So I just want to give the listeners a bit of context, because I was thinking about our meetup, like how we first were introduced to each other, and it was actually because you had tested your hormones through our family business, and you and I had a session where we kind of talked about next steps. And somehow in that session, I think we really hit it off and you were like, oh, I live in LA too. And so we ended up meeting up for some walks, and then the pandemic hit. And I was just remembering that we did some really fun like IG lives, and you even taught like a workout class for my group coaching. And that was awesome because I feel like everybody was so isolated at that time. And so just to build that community and get movement was really awesome. But gosh, that being about 4 years ago now to where you are now and how much has happened. I mean, it's like a lifetime of things have happened in your life since then. And we want to talk about all of it. We obviously wanted to get into your cancer diagnosis story, but we want to start because we're always really interested in sort of that origin story of your upbringing and a little bit on your backstory. And I'm really interested in you know, any experiences or events or memories from childhood that you think maybe propelled you into the health and fitness world that you came to be so passionate about?
Yeah. Wow. Oh my gosh. Memory trip down memory lane with right? everything that you just said. I'm like, that feels like eons ago because mm-hmm. my life has just been so crazy for the last year and a half. But I guess going to your original question is about growing up is I'm from the Midwest. I grew up in Missouri. I grew up in a small town in Missouri called Warrensburg, Missouri originally. I was like born in South America. I lived in San Diego as a child. And so, but we settled down in Missouri and that's where I lived for most of my youth. And, yeah, I grew up in a household with three other siblings, like divorced parents, but my stepdad helped raise us. And it was my mom was a very holistic person. She was kind of ahead of the curve on health and wellness. She wouldn't let us take medicine. She wouldn't really let us eat much processed foods. If I was like, oh, I'm sick, I have a cold, she's like, here's some olive of oregano. And so... But as a kid in the 90s and early 2000s, you're like, I absolutely hate this. Like, why can't I just get some Pepto-Bismol and like my life be better? But as I got older and I really started appreciating the natural side of food and wellness and health and all of those things, I really grew to appreciate that upbringing a bit because what my mom was doing back then, people are now doing now. So it's kind of like interesting to see all of the things that have come about since then. But yeah, I got my degree in health science. I always wanted to be a doctor. I've always been a very curious individual. And I loved dissecting things and being like weird as a kid. I had like a, like a biology kit, like a chemistry kit, biology kit. Like I used to be weird. The weirdest things. And I'd be like, I want to be a doctor. And then when I got into school, I was like, this is too hard. So let me do health science. So yeah, right. That kind of just like set the tone for being in this industry.
So you were the kid that actually liked dissecting the owl poop. Do you guys remember that?
Owl poop?
Oh yeah. We had to like dissect like owl poop and like different in our classes in elementary school and like different animals.
Oh yeah, we did animals. I was like, no poop. We did animals like as a kid in elementary school. We had to make like insect boards, which yeah. I like felt like I was like, this is so weird that we're killing all these insects off and putting them on these boards. But then I would find like dead animals and I would like dissect them and then like look under them under the microscope and like study it. And like I really wanted to understand like animals and like human bodies. It's I sound like a psychopath, but like they were dead.
No, I think that's so cool because science was the one subject that I just couldn't get into. And I have so much admiration for people who do and can understand it. And so, I mean, ironic now working in hormone health but you know, that was just something, an area that wasn't my strong suit. But to get back to you after college, how did you, did you get your start in fitness or like, what was the career trajectory for you?
Yeah. So I worked for a health IT company for 3 years and it was very corporate and I am very much not a corporate girly at all. I'm like, someone tells me what to do and I'm like, I don't want to do that. But I got really good experience. But after 3 years, I was like, I need to fly the coop and I need to go live abroad. So I actually moved to Thailand and I lived in Bangkok for a year and a half. Wow. And I was doing a blog and I started an online boutique and I was thinking I was going to get into fitness. But then I got asked to help do promo with my blog for the first spin studio in Bangkok. And so I started spinning there like every single week and I became obsessed with it. So when I moved back home to Kansas City, I had a childhood friend who was opening up a cycle bar in Kansas City and she was like, do you want to be an instructor? And I was like, why not? So I became an instructor there and that's kind of like where it began. And then I auditioned to open up a studio in Los Angeles and I was always doing fitness on the side. But then once the pandemic hit, that's actually when I went all in on fitness and I started moving my career into on-camera work. So I became a trainer for Amazon Halo, which was their fitness app. And I'm still a trainer for Pop Sugar and then I did like personal training and all of these things. So I'm still in the fitness world, but yeah, it's kind of just progress. I think being in that industry, it's easy to progress. It's easy to do like so many different things. And that's just always how I've been, is like, I don't want to just do one static thing. Like I want to do like a million different things. So yeah.
Yeah. The perfect place for you to end up. So we know you, you tested with us. Was that during the pandemic?
I think it was like right before. Yeah, I think it was before, because I had been dealing with health issues for like 4 years, from 2018 to like 2022. So I think it was maybe around 2018.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Can you share a little bit about the health issues you were going through at that time?
Yeah, so I was on birth control, as most women our age, for about, now I'm like forgetting numbers because so much has changed, like 12 years, I think, maybe 17 years. I don't remember the number, but literally since I was like 16 years old, 17 years old, I started birth control, and I stopped in 2018, and my body just started going haywire. I was like gaining all of this weight, but I was working out the same. I was always really clean with my nutrition. I was getting hormonal acne, and I was having all these gut issues. There was like a million and one things that were going wrong. And I was going to the doctors and no one knew what was up with me. And so, I went to, maybe I spoke with Jess. I don't know how I think I actually heard a podcast. I think it was one of the podcasts that I listened to, and all of the symptoms that the girl was having, I also was experiencing. So I was like, maybe I need to test my hormones. So yeah, that's kind of how, I got introduced to your company, was through that. And yeah, that was kind of like started the 4 years of going to so many doctors and trying to treat all of these different symptoms and side effects as separate entities. And then eventually I realized that they were all kind of correlated and tied to the same issue.
Yeah. I actually remember us meeting up for walks and you were super frustrated. You were like, I don't understand. Like I literally eat healthier and exercise more than like most people that I know. And I just don't feel great. Mm-hmm. And I remember you were super frustrated, and that was before you had gotten your Hashimoto's diagnosis. And then I remember you had that diagnosis, and you'll have to share more about kind of that trajectory. But I remember that was sort of, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was sort of when you started becoming more active on TikTok and like sharing that. Mm-hmm. And that sort of like became the platform where you were, I think you were sharing a lot of really powerful messages for women, PSAs, like here's how to advocate for yourself. And then just so crazy that not that long after, you were then diagnosed with breast cancer. So can you talk a little bit about like that time in your life and how you went from that diagnosis to a breast cancer diagnosis not long after?
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot for me to go through 4 years of real struggle. Like I would say, aside from this breast cancer, that was the hardest struggle I'd gone through probably my whole life. I mean, I've had so many issues in my whole life, but the frustration of feeling like you have no control over something and you're trying and you're doing everything you can and in your power to figure something out. You're spending so much money. I spent like 20 grand on doctors over those 4 years. Wow. And to, at the end of the day, to feel like I still don't have answers, it's like made me want to jump off a bridge, honestly, because I was like, I was gaining weight every single week and I was eating so clean. I cut out alcohol for like a year. I did all of the things and nothing was working. So I eventually got connected with this doctor based out of New York who had helped my friend, and she was also diagnosed with Hashimoto's. And I had went to acupuncture once, and this woman was really, really educated. And she was looking at all of my numbers, all my blood work. And she was looking at my like liver counts. And she was like, a lot of doctors like attribute these liver numbers to your liver, but it's actually tied to like your hormones and your thyroid, but your thyroid numbers are normal. But have you been tested for Hashimoto's? And I was like, what's Hashimoto's? I don't even know what that is. Like none of my doctors had ever tested me for that. So then when I got introduced to this doctor in New York, that was the first thing he tested me for, was the antibody test, and it came back as high. And he was like, you have Hashimoto's. And I was like, what? Like, and then of course, the first thing I tell my mom, I'm like, I have Hashimoto's. She's like, oh, I have Hashimoto's. And I was like, are you serious?
Wow.
I was like, 4 years and you couldn't have told me? She's like, oh, I forgot. I was like, what? I was, don't get me started on my mom. I was so mad at my mom for that. But yeah, so I was diagnosed in March. I got put on medicine. And then that summer, this was March of 2022. That summer, it was like I was losing the weight. I was feeling back to myself. My energy was up. The brain fog was clearing. And I was like, finally, like, I was so happy. And I was like, breathing a sigh of like relief. And I felt like my career was peaking. It was just like everything for the first time in probably my entire life, things were coming together. And I was so grateful. But then that summer in July, I found a lump on my right breast. And I always did my monthly breast exams. Breast cancer doesn't run in my family, but I just being in the health space and that was like my degree. Like I've always just done it just to do it. And when I found the lump, I was like, oh, this is probably just like a cyst. I asked, I like spoke to so many people and they were like, oh, well, it moves around. Like you should be okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was like the first thing. I don't know if you want me to go into the story just yet, but that was like the first thing of, yeah, going into breast cancer.
Okay. I mean, I would say continue on from there. So you find the lump, people kind of downplayed it, but when did you get like a real answer on that and how did that go from there?
Yeah. So I found that lump in July and it was actually about 2 weeks before I was about to go on a bunch of work trips, like all over the country. I was going to Seattle to film for Amazon. Then I was flying to New York. I was going to Dallas. Like I didn't really have time to stop and be like, okay, I actually have to find a gynecologist because I hadn't had a gynecologist in so long. And it was August now, and I ended up going to a friend's wedding. And I was really stressed about this lump. Like every time I was out, I was feeling it. I was like, is it getting bigger? Like it was just always in the back of my mind. And I was in the bathroom with the bride and actually this other woman who I had never met before. We were all in the big stall and she was like, I'm a gynecologist. And I was like,
oh, what?
Yeah. And now thinking back, I was like, this is divine timing, like divine intervention for sure. And I was like, I know we've been drinking. I was like, and I know you don't know me. I was like, but I found this lump. I was like, could you do a breast exam on me and just give me advice? Like, I don't have a gynecologist. So literally in this bathroom, pulled my dress down, arms above my head. She gives me a full breast exam. And she was like, I don't think it's anything to worry about. She's like, it feels like it could just be a cyst, but I would definitely go get a mammogram and an ultrasound and just for peace of mind. So I was like, okay, thank you. That's what I needed to hear. So I got back to LA. I contacted one of my friends who had one, and I went to this place in Los Angeles called Valley Breast Care, and they do free breast mammograms and ultrasounds. Okay. And so I went in, I had that. Even the nurses there were like, it's a really good sign that the lump moves around because usually if it's cancerous, it kind of just stays there. So I was feeling very hopeful and I was like, there's no way. I was like, I think I've known two people in my entire life who were friends, moms, like when I was way younger who had breast cancer. So I was like, there's no way it's me. And so when the results came back, they were like, we want you to get a biopsy, like a couple biopsies, because there's a couple spots in question. So I was like, okay, again, being Delulu and just being like, everything's fine. I go and do the biopsy, which was traumatic. They literally hook you up to a machine. They stick, like, you cannot move. Your face is like this. They stick a needle, like, all the way down to get, like, the exact tissue. And then they did that in three different spots for me in that same day. So like the recovery is crazy. Your breast is like bruised for like a week and a half. Like you can't really work out. It's a lot. And then on top of that, the emotional toll of like, okay, is this going to be cancer or am I fine? And I kept telling myself I was fine. And then I got a call. It was a Monday afternoon. I was driving home from the gym and I hadn't heard from the nurses or doctors all weekend. And the nurse called me and she was like, hey, Amanda, like it's the nurse at so-and-so. We would love for you to come in tomorrow morning as soon as you can because we want to give you your test results. And me, we're used to work in healthcare for the health IT company. I was in hospitals all the time. I worked in labs. I was like, I know if they can't give you the test results over the phone, like there's something up. So I was like, okay. So I made the appointment for 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning. As soon as I got off the phone, I called my sister. I lost it. I was like, intuitively, I just know something is wrong. And I was like, I've been thinking it was fine because everyone else has been telling me it was fine. And I lost it. And she was like, you have no control over what's happening. All you have control over is how you feel right now and what you can do right now in this moment. So go hang out with your friend, go distract yourself, go do something that's going to bring you some joy, and then deal with the appointment tomorrow. So I went to the movies with my friend that night and just kind of like wanted to take my mind off of it. But obviously I really couldn't that much. So I showed up to the clinic the next day. They were making me like get undressed and fill out even more paperwork. And I was like, I'm just coming for test results. Like, why do I need to do this? And they were like, oh, it's just protocol. You just have to do this. So I was sitting in the doctor's in the room. The doctor walks in with two or three nurses. And I was like, I just closed my eyes. And I was like, I know it. And he was like, Amanda, I'm so sorry to tell you, but you have breast cancer. And I was just like, me? What? Like, what are you talking about? And I think I was just in shock. Like, I wouldn't even allow myself to really cry because it wasn't really resonating quite yet. And I wanted him to tell me more because I just was like, what are you talking about? And yeah, he was just spitting a lot of things at me. And he was just like, this is going to be for the next year and a half, a big part of your life. And you're going to spend a lot of time in hospitals, but you're going to be okay in the end.
Wow. My gosh, I'm getting really emotional. I just can't imagine receiving that news.
No.
Yeah. It was very heavy, especially knowing like everything I had gone through for the last 4 years. And I felt like I was finally at a place that I could breathe and relax. And I was like, here we go. Like maybe that was just the training for this moment and for what I'm about to go through.
And I feel like so many of us think kind of like you did, like me, like these things happen to other people. Like this doesn't happen to me. Like,
and also because you are so healthy and like you said, I saw one of your reels, like you already were avoiding chemicals. You were raised in a home where you were like very aware of not doing things that could probably increase risks for cancer and like obviously working out regularly and eating healthy. So it's like, what? But yeah. That's another myth too of like,
so it can touch any of us. So it's like, how do you, when you got that diagnosis, like what were your initial, like your thoughts, your reactions, your emotions? Like, did you reach out to someone right away or did you need to take time to yourself?
No, I am a blabbermouth. So I literally I called my mom immediately. That was the first person. And it was when I got in the car and I couldn't even barely say it. I could barely say it. I was like, Mom, I was bawling. She was like, what? And I was like, I have breast cancer. She was like, what? And one thing about my mom, she has an autoimmune disorder called myasthenia gravis. So that affects your voluntary muscles, your breathing, your speech, your walking, a lot of those things. And she grew up in a very traumatic, stressful household. And I think it was her inability to be able to process that trauma and that stress that caused this autoimmune disorder in her. So when I told her about my breast cancer, it triggered her myasthenia gravis. So a week later, she was in the ICU. So, she was in the ICU for like weeks. They almost had to intubate her. She was having like back-to-back panic attacks. She couldn't breathe. She couldn't speak. Like it was very traumatic for our family because I was now just diagnosed with breast cancer. And now my mom was in the ICU. Like her life was, you know, it was risking her life. Like all of these things were happening. And then I was feeling the guilt like, oh, I told you about this. Oh, and, no. And now like you're in the hospital because of me. It was emotionally so hard for me to process everything that was happening and, what even the future looked like, because I just was like, is my life over? Am I going to die? Am I going to survive this? Like I'm so young. What?
Yeah. I can imagine that there was quite a period of time. Well, most people don't have the element of their mom then going into the ICU. So that is just insane that you had that happen as well. But I imagine for anyone after the diagnosis, you're in shock forever. But did you decide at a certain point, like, I'm going to decide that I am going to make it through? Or, you know, did you do mindset work or anything in particular? Like, do you remember having a moment where you're like, okay, as I go forward with this treatment, like, how did you get your mind prepared?
Yeah, I have gone through a lot in my life, and as most people do, but I feel like and maybe it's just the way that I process things. I'm a very deep, like, sensitive person. So when I feel to the, like, nth degree. So since as a kid, I really struggled as a kid in my household and in my family, and then with relationships and work and, like, all of these things. I felt like my entire life has kind of been like a uphill battle in a sense. And the way that I've been able to get through all of that is self-soothing, is mindset, is changing and reframing the way that I think, the way that I speak, the way that I maneuver. I can process things pretty quickly because I've had to teach myself how to do that in a sense. And in a way, it is a sense of protection. But it has helped me get through a lot of really challenging times in my life. And so when this happened, I felt like the first thing I said to myself is, Amanda, you've gone through these emotions before. You've gone through disappointment. You've gone through illness. You've gone through setbacks. You've gone through frustrations. You've gone through heartbreak. And these are all of these emotions that you're feeling right now in this moment. And you've gotten through all of that. So you can also get through this. And so I was like, this is going to be shitty and this is going to be hard. But it's only going to be harder if you make it harder on yourself by being negative. So I chose to be positive. I chose to try to share my journey, to try to help as many people as possible, because I was like, I'm not going to do this just for nothing. Like, if I can help one person, then at least this might have, like, a little bit of purpose to it.
Yeah. And I think that that is so incredible and profound, because I was sharing this with Rye a little bit earlier before we logged on, is like, I know that you've been really into, like, manifestation and visualization for a long time, like, even before this happened. And when we recently met up, I was asking you, like, how do you, when you get a cancer diagnosis or anything major like this happens in your life, where it literally derails, like, every image you had of your future, it could be easy to say, fuck manifestation. Like, fuck visualization. Like, I visualized the life that I wanted to lead and I was getting there. And then all of a sudden this happened. So, like, it doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if it did, then maybe this wouldn't have happened to me. And I think that is, you know, when it comes to manifestation, it comes to visualization, even for smaller things, I see people taking that approach where it's like, oh, well, I manifested or I visualized this life for myself and all of these hurdles came up. And so therefore it must not work. So can you share just sort of, like, the perspective shift that you took? Because, I mean, it's obviously sounds like, decided, you know, I'm going to keep moving forward. This is the only way that I'm actually going to be able to help others and to be able to go through this with the most positive headspace I can. And so how have you, I guess a better question is, at what point did you decide I'm going to share these messages with the world, essentially, because that's what you're opening yourself up to when you go on TikTok and YouTube.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think a lot of people, it's easy to go to the negative because the negative is an easy place to go to. And I think everything in your life happens for a reason. Every path, like the path that you're on, it's not just for nothing. And I think me going through that, doing all of that spiritual work for so many years prepared me for, like, sharing and helping others and helping myself get through those moments. And it was actually the day that I had to go in to get my test results that I was like, I'm going to share this because I want to remember this. If this is something, I want to remember how I felt. I want to remember, like, what I was wearing. I want to remember this moment because I tend to block things out too. So initially, my plans were, I just want to share this for myself as kind of like a live journal. But then once I got the diagnosis, I was like, there's no one online that I can look at right now to show me what does it look like to have cancer as a 32-year-old, especially breast cancer, because that's so prevalent in older women typically. That's what I thought at the time. And so I was like, I'm not going to be the last person, and I'm definitely not the first person, but if I can share my journey for someone who's diagnosed after me to be able to look at my page and look at my content and say, this is exactly what I'm about to be prepared for. This is exactly what I'm going to go into. And if I can give my advice and all of the things that I've already learned and taught myself up to this point to help someone stay positive or help someone, you know, have faith that they are going to survive this and that they can get through this, then if I help one person again, like, then this is not going to be just all for nothing. And so, that was really my mindset going into it. It wasn't like, I'm going to do this to create a community of cancer people or to be a cancer influencer or whatever it was. I was already, like you said, I was already sharing Hashimoto's content. So I was like, okay, well, now this is just like a new niche and a new slew of content that I can share, because regardless of if someone is going through cancer or not, like, people are also interested in it because everyone is touched by cancer.
Yeah. And actually on that point, you know, I wanted to get into some of the preventative stuff too, you know, for those who might not know the signs and symptoms to look for breast cancer, for potential breast cancer. Like, you are getting breast exams every year. I'm not doing that. I haven't done that. You know, so like, what are some of the things people should be doing, to, I guess, catch it early if that's one scenario, or just to be aware? So signs and symptoms, maybe like the exam, and then also, because it sounds like you took medication for thyroid and you were feeling better. So it didn't really sound like you had many symptoms other than the lump. So yeah. In your case, did you have any other symptoms? And then if not, what is like, what's normal to hear about?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm glad you're asking that, because a lot of women don't know. The number one thing I will say is, schedule your monthly breast exams yourself. Do your self exams, like in the shower, typically away from your menstrual cycle when your breasts aren't more like fibrous or lumpy or tender, because sometimes fibrous tissue, which I had very fibrous tissue, can sometimes feel like lumps, but it's not. So I would schedule it maybe like after your menstrual cycle finishes, but I would either do it laying in bed or I would do it in the shower, and it literally takes like 1 minute. So once a month, just put it in your calendar and just do it, because it saved so many people I know's lives. And that's how we found the breast cancer. Breast cancer is becoming so prevalent in young women. And I get messages every single week from girls who are literally 22, 23, who were like, I just got diagnosed stage 4. There's no breast cancer in my family. And it is it's a huge epidemic going on right now. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of stuff that you can do to prevent it because of the things that we're exposed to. Like, again, I was the healthiest person I knew, and that still wasn't enough. And a lot of times they're saying now, like, genetics really play such a small part in breast cancer. So it's just important that you advocate for yourself and you do those checks so that you, if you find something, you get it checked out as soon as possible. There are other symptoms as well. A lot of people will experience really bad fatigue. I was already going through the fatigue for 4 years. So it was hard for me, if there were symptoms from my breast cancer, to correlate that to the cancer versus to my thyroid issues, because my body, every part of my body, I was dealing with issues. So, but if all of a sudden you like can't keep your eyes open, you sleep and, you know, you sleep 8 hours, 9 hours, and that's not enough, and by noon or whatever, you don't have any energy, get that checked out as well. Discharge from the nipple, obviously we know that's not typically normal. So especially if you're not like breastfeeding or anything and you're experiencing that, some people will experience finding a scab that won't go away. Like there'll be a scab, they'll pick it, the scab comes back, and it's kind of a repetitive thing. That's a really big sign of breast cancer as well. So just being cognizant of what your body, the normal state of your body, quote unquote, normal state of your body is, and if there's any changes, to really go get it checked out as soon as possible. I know that there's a lot of fear around the knowing, and a lot of people will wait. I get comments all the time as, oh, I have this painful lump, but I'm really too scared to go get it checked out. Please, please, for the love of God, do not wait, because that's not going anywhere. And the longer you wait, like, unfortunately, it could be stage four. It could be terminal. And if you were to go the moment you found out and it's stage one, stage two, and then you wait 3 months and then it's stage four, you don't want to regret it going to stage four, because when you get breast cancer stage four, that's the rest of your life and it's incurable. So, you know, it's just really important to advocate for yourself. And even though it's scary, to be brave and be fearless in those moments.
Oh my gosh. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Thank you. That's really helpful. I was just going to ask if you could share what your specific type of breast cancer was, and if it was like estrogen driven. I can't remember if you mentioned already what stage you were at that point.
No, I hadn't mentioned. So my story is like a little funky. When I was originally diagnosed, I was diagnosed as DCIS, which is called ductal carcinoma in situ. So they used to call this stage zero. It means that the cancer is still encapsulated within the cells. So it hasn't officially like released into your body as cancer. So it's like the earliest form of cancer. From my biopsy, the spots that they biopsied, that was DCIS. But when I did an MRI and I did my PET scan, my lymph nodes were lighting up. And so I had to do 3 more biopsies in my lymph nodes. And they determined that it had actually spread to my lymph nodes. And that was invasive. And so I had 2 forms kind of breast cancer. And so after they found that it had spread to my lymph nodes, I was stage 2. And my treatment plan completely changed. When you're DCIS, you don't go through chemo. You don't, you usually just do surgery. You'll have a double mastectomy or a lumpectomy. If you do a lumpectomy, you'll have to do radiation. If you do a double mastectomy, it's one and done, and then you're done. If I wouldn't have had those additional scans and they wouldn't have seen that it had spread to my lymph nodes, the cancer could have spread throughout my entire body, because that's kind of like the gates for the rest of your body. So I'm very grateful that they caught it. But that also meant I had to now do chemo and potentially radiation and a lot more other things. So yeah, it completely changed. And I'm also triple positive. So that means that my cancer grows on my hormones. So when I stopped birth control, my hormones were all over the place. My estrogen was high. My progesterone was low. I started on progesterone cream, which means I was putting progesterone in my body. And I attribute a big reason as to why I believe it was the perfect storm in my body for cancer to grow is through the birth control, the synthetic hormones that I was putting in my body. And then when I stopped, my body was just couldn't regulate on its own. And my cancer, it just kind of created that perfect storm for that my breast cancer to grow on those hormones.
Wow.
And when you talk to your doctors about this, because I know I feel like you've had to advocate for yourself in so many different ways in this medical setting. What were some of the things that you wish that you had known prior, or that you would have been, you know, better prepared for going in? Because I know that that's something that you're passionate about sharing with others, so that they can feel more prepared.
There are so many things that doctors don't tell you. One, because they don't have time. There's so many possibilities and options of what could happen when you're about to embark on a cancer treatment. I wish I would have known how much it would really affect my life, not just physically, and emotionally, but also like the timeline. I was thinking when I was diagnosed, my doctor was like, this is going to be a year of your life. I was like, okay, cool. Year of my life. I'm going to still work. Like you go into it thinking you're going to hold on to your normal life. You're going to work and you're just going to be getting treatment. And then once treatment ends, everything is back to normal. And what people don't know is that the moment you're diagnosed, you will never be that same person ever again. And I had no idea. And when you have a hormonal cancer, they essentially stop the hormones in your body. So I have been in a medical menopause for the last year and a half. I never thought I would be there. Like I was like, menopause is for, you know, women in their 50s. Like I won't ever have to deal with that. And that really affected me. It affected me because I was seeing my friends having babies and dating and getting married and buying homes and really elevating their careers. And it felt like my life was on a standstill and I couldn't really have access to any of that.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you about that. Like when you get a diagnosis like this, how does it impact the lens through which you view like your friendships and your career and even the idea of future?
I was sad and it came in waves. I mean, I'm kind of out of it a little bit now, but it's really hard because you can't date. You can date, but it's a lot if you're in the dating world to ask someone to kind of sign on to that. You feel this like guilt and a little bit of shame around it. I hid it from people at the beginning. I tried to date as long as possible and I didn't tell any of the guys that I was going on these dates with, but then it got too hard for me. I was like, this is literally my life 24/7 and I can't just hide this. So I stopped dating. And I was seeing my friends all become pregnant with their first or second child. And that's in my life. That's all I've wanted was to be a mom. And so, yeah, it's really hard because I was 32 and now I'm 34 and I just feel like it really put me back a little bit. And I'm like, is that coming for me? And now I feel older on top of like the cancer treatment, but and also the pandemic. It's like, I feel like I've lost like 5 years of my life. And I'm like, I'm about to be 35 this year. And how did I get here? Not that like 35 is old at all. And I love being in my 30s, but I just feel like I've lost so much time that I needed to feel like I could progress forward. And so dealing with that emotional side of things is really challenging. And I think a lot of cancer patients will say that is like, you feel like you are at a standstill and like the world is going by you at warp speed.
1,000%. And I can imagine like looking around and seeing everybody just go about their lives like normal and planning their futures and their weddings and their kids and all these things. And you're like, I don't know if I have a future. Like, I don't know what my future looks like. I just can't even imagine what that experience is like. So can you give us sort of like, because honestly, I don't think people have any idea of what this stuff looks like. Like even just like a week in your life going through cancer treatment, like what did your week look like? Because you were super active, you were teaching, you had clients, like, and now all of a sudden you not only have this diagnosis and you have all these appointments, but I can imagine that you're still having to shell out a lot of money and not making as much money.
Yeah. Well, and the thing about cancer treatment is every pillar of treatment is so different from chemo to surgery recovery to radiation. And then I did 14 rounds of low dose chemo, which was like 9 additional months of chemotherapy. So it's like every part of treatment was so different. So I guess like at the beginning, I'll talk about like the beginning, like you were on the phone call with doctors every hour, probably for like the first month. You are literally in this like whirlwind of life of trying to find the right treatment doctors and care team, calling insurance to make sure that things are approved. And if not, like getting them approved, going to appointments. Like I had to get my port put in. I had to schedule the chemo. I had to rush to freeze my eggs. So then I had to find a clinic to be able to freeze my eggs and then the injections. And then on top of these like logistical things, emotionally, you're trying to process what is all happening and you don't even really have time to process. Like you're crying as you're like driving to your appointment and crying, trying to figure out like, can I afford freezing my eggs? But if I don't freeze my eggs, like I'm not going to be able to have kids. So then once treatment starts, it kind of slows down a little bit. And my thing is like you mentioned, I was in fitness and I was like at the peak of my career. I was at the beginning, I was wanting to try to maintain as much of that as possible. Like I was like, I want to live my life, but just be in treatment. So I decided to cold cap and I was trying to hold on to as much of my quote unquote normal life as possible. And I did for as long as I could because I started treatment from a very high set point. I was very healthy and I really took care of myself. And so I felt strong going through treatment, but towards the end, it catches up to you. And I had to stop working. I let go of all of my personal training clients. I really just had to prioritize resting and my health. And so then it went from working a lot to not working a lot and spending a lot of time at home and friends coming to me and family coming to me. And every 3 weeks I had a new chemo. So that first week of chemo, I was at home sick every day for a week. And then I would slowly be able to emerge and go back into society. And then the week before treatment, I was like, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm going to plan a dinner with my friends. Like I was always trying to celebrate little wins and still try to have something to look forward to throughout the rest of treatment. So yeah, it's all so different and it's different for everyone. But you literally just feel like you're in a tornado for all of treatment. And now that I've just finished, I feel like I just crossed the finish line and life just came to a screeching halt. And everything that I just went through for the last year and a half has hit me. And now the emotions are coming and it's like, what just happened? And let me now try to process everything and release everything that I just went through.
It is a lot to process. And, you know, I was noticing some of your posts talking about the misconceptions around treatment or things people don't know. And you also mentioned, you know, relationships changing on top of it. What was your experience like with that? And is it people not being there for you, not getting it, not like what was the situation for you?
You lose a lot of relationships with cancer, surprisingly. I thought going into it, like everyone was going to rally around me. My closest friends were going to become even closer. Strangers were going to become close friends. And what I had to remind myself is that life goes on for everyone, regardless of what happens. And a lot of people, it's really hard for them to be able to handle and process the emotional part of their own life, let alone the heaviness that cancer brings. And so people don't really know how to show up for you, unfortunately. And even though you don't really need to overcomplicate it, sometimes the best support is just a text message or just checking in or just being like, hey, I just want to send you a text that I love you and I'm thinking of you, or, you know, bringing you over like dinner or something, you know, it can be so small. But I lost a lot of relationships. I lost some really close friends that I thought would be my ride or dies. And at the beginning, they just kind of fell off. And I don't hold grudges because I know, again, people can't handle their things. And at the end of the day, I'm like, those people weren't meant for me. And that's okay. Because the people that ended up being some of my closest friends were people that I never would have thought would become my closest friends. They were literally like acquaintances. I lost work. I lost a lot of relationships. And that's what a lot of people with cancer will talk about, is just the people in their life that unfortunately fall to the wayside when this happens.
It seems like a lot of people don't know how to process your news and they don't know maybe how to hold space for you. And so then they just ghost, where it's like, I don't know how to handle this. I don't know the right thing to say or the right thing to do. So I'd rather, like, I'm just avoiding it seems easier than maybe saying the wrong thing. And I think maybe that could be a good PSA to share is like, if you do know somebody who's been touched by cancer, like, I know you said send a text, but like, truly, how can you be there for that person without like overstepping or asking too many questions, you know, or being like, you know, too in your face about it?
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And like, I tried to talk about this like a little bit online, but it is hard because I think even for someone going through cancer, you're trying to process it all yourself. And you're like, I don't even know what to say. Like, I don't know what to say. So it is hard to tell someone this is exactly what I need because I don't even really know what I need. I think the best advice, though, is instead of asking someone what they need, because they don't really know, just offer something. Just be like, I would love to bring you food. I would love to come over and just sit with you. I would love to drive you to an appointment. I would love to just send you a gift card or like something, you know, just so that it takes also a little bit of stress from their mind. Because when we have to constantly tell other people what to do for us, that's just another to-do list item for us when we already have so much going on around us. Mm-hmm. And so if you could just like relieve one thing off of my list, that would just, honestly, I feel like the best things that I received when I was in treatment were the day of treatment texts, like in the morning, someone being like, I know you have chemo today. Just know that I'm thinking of you. I'm praying for you and I'm sending you so much love. Or the just like random gift cards that people would just send me, or, you know, like, or just someone being like, I'm by your house. Can I stop by and just come sit with you? Like, those meant the world to me. And maybe that's because my love language is quality time. And I like love that stuff, but, it just makes us feel like we aren't alone going through what we're going through.
100%. And what about when you're out like with the girls' night dinner, right? You're trying to have some like normalcy in your life or whatever you're doing, or, like getting all dressed up. Like, did you ever have anxiety going into those hangouts? Like, oh gosh, like, you know, we're going to be talking about this, or, you know, hopefully people ask me about it. Or did you want there to just, was there a part of you that wanted to just go out and have fun and not talk about it?
No, I like talking about it because my big thing as a kid, I was never really seen or heard. So when people acknowledge something that I'm going through, it makes me feel seen and heard and validated. So it's like, if they're checking in on me at the beginning and we're all talking about it, it's like, okay, I'm going to tell you all about what's going on and then we can move on. And I want to hear about all the gossip and let's just have fun. That's kind of like how it would go. And then I would be like, okay, now spill all the tea, like what's going on in your life. And like, let me get out of my little like sick bubble for a second. So yeah.
That makes a lot of sense for sure. Jess, I don't know if you had anything else before we jump to kind of where you are today, but I mean, there's so much within that year and a half of treatment, and you had your last scan today and you are cancer free, right?
I am.
Which is huge and amazing. And we're so, so happy for you. And, you know, anyone listening to this podcast, you'll share at the end your Instagram, but they've got to check out your content because it's just, I was crying looking over it because it's so powerful that you've finished treatment and you planned this trip to Europe to celebrate, and seeing all of your videos with your best friend, it's like the most touching thing that you've been through hell and you are now in this phase of not only, it sounds like, still processing what you've gone through, but also allowing yourself to celebrate and live this life that you have. And so can you talk about the feelings, emotions, and kind of like what it's been like being in this stage on the other side and celebrating and also committing yourself to sharing messages that will help other people? How does this all feel now?
Oh yeah, you're exactly right. Like, I am processing. I literally finished 3 weeks ago. So the last 2 weeks have been really challenging for me. I'll be 100% honest with you. People talk about the end being one of the hardest parts about treatment, because you're kind of thrown back into society and expected to kind of show up as like a normal, healthy, able body. And you're not. I'm completely different on a cellular level, on top of emotional, physical, spiritual everything level. And I'm trying to figure out what that looks like. I'm trying to figure out who is this new version of me. I went to Coachella this last weekend, and I used to love Coachella. This was like my fourth or fifth Coachella. And I, like, it was the one thing that like brought me so much joy, going to like a 3-day music festival. And this weekend I realized this isn't as fun as for me anymore. And I kind of struggled with that, because I was like, this used to bring me so much joy, and now it's not. So I am such a completely different person. And there's just a lot of things that get brought up and triggered from so many different things. I lost a friend last week to cancer, and I met him in the fall at a cancer surf camp through this company called First Descents that puts on these free adventures for like a week for people who have been affected by cancer. And it's amazing. And you become so close with these people who have also gone through cancer. And I met this guy, Eric. His nickname, we had nicknames there. His nickname was Grizzy, and he was 24 and had been battling Ewing sarcoma for about 5 years. And so he passed last week. And that was really hard for me, because I had just finished treatment, and it was such a awakening and slap in the face of how hard this actually is. Because when you go through treatment, you are just in survival mode and you don't have time to process. So now I've stopped and I have time to process everything. And I'm just seeing, I feel like a lens has opened up in my eyes on like what life really is. So I'm figuring it out as I go, and I'm just trying to put one foot in front of the other, as I've been doing, but just trying to pause and give myself the space and the grace to figure that out, and allowing myself to really just cry and be. So, sorry, I forgot what your second question was, but I hope I answered the first question.
No, yeah, you did. Just what it's been like in this stage, being on the other side, and like, how did your Europe trip feel?
So good. I mean, I was tired, because that's how I travel. But my one thing, and if you are listening to this and you are on your cancer journey, my biggest advice to you is to celebrate every small and big win. That is the one thing that like kept me happy throughout this whole year and a half, was every treatment day, like chemo day, I would like do something special for myself in the morning, whether that was just like going and getting a really nice coffee, or after chemo that night, I would like have takeout or something, you know? And then I would plan like a dinner with girlfriends for when I was feeling better. When I finished my original 6 rounds of chemo, I booked a trip to Japan, and I went to Japan. And then like at my 1 year mark, I had like a party. And so it was like, I always had something to look forward to celebrate, because when you're going through these steps, it feels like life could end, or life is ending. And so if you have these little milestones and these little markers to remind you that like, you're still in it, you're still here, and like life is good, it makes treatment a little bit better. So Europe was like the grand finale of I'm done with treatment, and I'm going to Italy. I'm going to try to find me an Italian husband, which I found a couple.
Amazing.
And yeah, I just wanted to have a time of my life, and I did.
When you were speaking too, it's like, I feel like, I mean, we just celebrated you, like, you're through cancer treatment, you're officially cancer free. Like, that's so exciting, right? And I wonder too, like, we talked about how can people support you while you're going through it, but I think even more so after it, but equally so afterwards, because now that you're cancer free, it seems like, I'm sure a lot of people are like, okay, you got through it, right? Moving on with life. Like, we're all just moving on with life. And for you, you're forever changed. And so I think about it similarly as to someone who loses someone really close to them. Everybody's checking in with you right after they've passed. And then the check-ins kind of get less frequent, and then they stop, and everyone just assumes, oh, you've moved on, right? That was a year ago. And so I guess as another PSA for people that have been touched by cancer, or know somebody who has and have come out the other side and they're now cancer free, what does that support look like for you? What do you need from your community and your friends and family?
Thank you for asking that, because I didn't even realize until yesterday with a call with my therapist that I needed this. So like the fact that you're seeing that is huge. So thank you. I had this conversation, yeah, with my therapist yesterday, and she was like, maybe with the people that are so close to you, you need them to check in on you to acknowledge that you're different, that you've changed, that like, are your energy levels okay? And this was more in reference to like Coachella, because I realized I was really tired. I was really, really tired physically. And when people see that your hair is growing back and you're looking like you're back to your pre-cancer looking self and you're back to work and you're doing all of these things that you're like, good. It was exactly how I thought. It was like, okay, I'm going to finish treatment and then I'm going to go back to normal. But I am completely different. I maneuver different. My energy levels are different. The way that I think is completely different. Again, like, do I even like the same things anymore? So I just think it's important for the people in your life who love you and who know you and who have been through it all with you to continue to do those little check-ins with you, and for you to also check in with them and tell them like, listen, I need to take a breather. Like I don't even want to drink like this anymore. I just want to stay in all weekend and I want to rest. And I just think it's important to have that transparency back and forth.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, obviously your priorities have changed, your perspective on life has changed. And it's like when we realize that we've grown out of a friendship, we have these epiphanies sometimes where it's like, wait, why am I still friends with you? Oh, because we were friends in kindergarten, but like we have literally nothing else in common. And so I'm sure coming out the other side, there's some perspective shifts in terms of like people that were in your life or things that you used to do that maybe are no longer serving and supporting that next level version of yourself. Yeah. Now that you're cancer free.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that, I mean, you've shifted your, since getting the diagnosis, going through treatment, you've been sharing all along on TikTok, it sounds like, YouTube, Instagram. How has your business and your daily work shifted now talking about cancer, helping others? Like what are all the things that you're doing?
I have really tried to take up as much space as possible in the cancer realm. Obviously I am in a transition period, so like fitness and social media, it's all kind of, I'm just trying to figure it all out. I am putting a lot of my focus on social media, especially just as cancer continues to spread in young adults. I want to continue to like hold space and be able to provide as much support and resources for people. So like right now I lead a online support group called Cancer Baddies that meets every 2 weeks, and it's with women all around the world who have various forms of cancer. It's not just breast cancer, who are at different stages of life. Some of them are in remission and some people are starting their treatment, and we just sit on Zoom and we talk, we share highs and lows, we ask questions, we just really bond together and we feel seen and heard from each other, which is so needed. And I wanted it to be for all different types of cancer rather than just like a specific type, because regardless of what cancer you're going through, like you're sharing such similar experiences. But I try to partner with as many large cancer organizations as possible just to expand my reach, because I'm only one individual, but I want to be able to like reach the masses. And I want to be able to like help as many people who feel alone and don't know really where to go. So that's my goal. That's what I'm trying to manifest and put out there, that I can really reach as many people as possible. And I have a little project in the works for some cancer patients, which I'm really excited about. It's some cancer sweatshirts that are really needed in hospitals. And so, I'm working on that. And yeah, I don't know. Fitness is still like, I'm still in fitness, but for me, fitness is a tool. It's never really been my end all be all. So it will be interesting to see what unfolds over the coming year. And I'm praying opportunities keep coming through, because I'm like, okay, now I'm done with treatment. I'm like over here, like tapping my toes and my fingers, like waiting for stuff to come through and trying my best.
It will, yeah. Because you're manifesting it, and that is like one of your gifts. And that was actually
doing. And you're also doing all
the doing it.
Yeah,
you can just be like, "Oh, I want this to happen." Drops in your lap. But that kind of segued into a question I have for you in terms of like to just share. What are some things that you've learned about yourself in this process in terms of like, whoa, I didn't realize that like I was this strong, or I didn't realize that like proud moments that you've had for yourself.
One thing that's really come up for me over the last 2 weeks, I went to this beautiful event last night where it was like energetic healing and it was all women, and I have not cried this hard in a really long time, is that my entire life I've been wearing this armor to be strong for myself emotionally, to be strong for people around me, it's just who I am. Like, I am a leader naturally, and I do like to hold space for other people and support them. But throughout this entire process, I haven't had the time to mother myself, and I need that. I realized that like I need the time to be vulnerable and be soft, and I don't really want to be as hard and as strong anymore. And after I was diagnosed, it was a learning curve for me to ask for help and be more in a receive mode, which I had never been in my entire life. So yeah, that's like one thing that I'm learning about myself, is to try to be like a little bit softer and not as in my masculine as I've had to be my entire life.
Would you, if you could tell the version of yourself that got that diagnosis and was about to go through all of this treatment, is there anything that you would say to that version of you before it all began?
Don't make me cry, because
take a moment. Take a moment.
Yeah.
It's all very
emotional. Yeah, I'm like looking at myself sitting on that little doctor's bed waiting for the doctor to come in and just be like, this is gonna be hard, but it's gonna be okay, and you're gonna help so many people. And for me, my purpose, like living through my actual purpose, is what I'm meant to do. And that's always been my like goal throughout my entire life, pre-cancer and now. And so if I could just tell myself right before I was getting diagnosed that like, you are going to find a new purpose and you're going to help so many people, and it's going to be worth it. So I think that that's what I would have needed to hear in that moment.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Honestly, Amanda, I know I've told you before, but you sharing so open and vulnerably on social media and TikTok and YouTube and going on in like the darkest moments of your life, like, not to put down social media, but there is a lot of performative posts that are going on there with people crying. And sometimes it just feels like, can we cut the crap a little bit? I mean, you know, it just doesn't always feel super authentic, even though we're talking about how you should be authentic on Instagram. And sometimes even like as a coach, I know, Rye, you probably feel this way too with our visit. Sometimes you're just like, do people even care what I have to say? Am I even coming across like myself? Like, we all get into our own heads about it. And it's hard to find people that you deeply connect with and resonate with on Instagram that you feel like are being 100% themselves and not doing it really for any particular gain other than to help others. And that's truly the vibe that you give, is like, yeah, you literally are like, could not be more real, could not be more yourself. And I know that there's been moments where it was so hard for you to turn on the camera and that you question even publishing the post because of how vulnerable you were. But like, the way that you've touched me in your videos, in your posts, like, I can't even imagine the ripple effect that you've already had on this world and how many people you've touched that haven't told you, you know, because they're keeping it close to their heart. But just know, like, you've already touched hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives through your story. And so, like, you're just beginning. Like, you are going to, I mean, I can't wait to see what happens in your life. I just, yeah, it's going to be incredible.
Thank you. That means so much. Like, that means so much for me, and like on a deeper level than I think you realize, not only because you're my friend, but just because, like I said, like being seen and heard is such a huge thing for me. And a lot of times, like I do get in my head too, I think we all do as content creators, is like, do people care? And maybe the numbers aren't growing as much. And like, are people as receptive to this? And like, are people going to think I'm cheesy? But that is my goal at the end of the day, is to like, I don't really give a shit. I don't know if I can cuss, but like, yeah. I don't really care what like other people are doing. And I know my stuff is not aesthetic, and I know my stuff is not like trendy and cute, but like that never has been me. And so I have just tried to be as authentic to who I am as a person, like sharing my journey. Because I think that when you are authentic to you, like the right people will come along. So thank you for saying that.
It's so true. And I think your stuff is still, it's so deep and meaningful and helpful. And I also am like, damn, she's got like, cause we struggle a lot with reels and things like, how do you make this catchy or interesting? And I feel like you have it down where you're sharing these messages that might be really deep, but in a way that's like digestible, you know, and kind of brings you in, and then you want to read the caption. So I think you're nailing it. And I think you choosing this medium or these mediums of TikTok, YouTube, every platform you can be on is the right decision for you, because that's how people can find you quickly. And that's really important that the right person sees what you're talking about. Cause I don't really know any other accounts that I've come across that are sharing the kind of messages you are. And like you said, you being diagnosed, not even knowing anybody else that have been diagnosed, like that has to change knowing the rates at which that, you know, cancer is spreading. So just seriously, you're doing all the right things, and we're, you know, just happy to know you and happy to continue watching how you grow. And we'd love for you to end by sharing how people can find what you're doing. And then also if there's any other resource, I mean, the fact that you're doing these support groups is amazing, because that's such a huge piece of the puzzle for people to feel heard, seen, supported. But if there's anything else that helped you when you were going through this that you might recommend, or we can just like drop stuff in the show notes
later. Yeah. Thank you for saying that as well too. Like, ugh, that means so much, because I literally question myself every day. I'm like, you know, when like the work's not as consistent as it used to be, I'm like, am I doing the wrong thing? Should I just go get a 9-to-5? Like, what do I, you know? So that means so much. But my name on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube is Hi Amanda Butler. So you can follow me there. Yes, I lead Cancer Baddies Support Group. There is a link in my bio and all of my platforms that you can fill out a form and I will invite you. And I also share a weekly free newsletter with all tips and tricks and to getting through cancer treatment and mindset shifts and all of those things. And actually, I wrote a book last year on chemotherapy. So if you're interested, if you're about to start chemotherapy and you're like, what do I need to do? What is this even going to look like? It is also in the link in my bio and also available on Amazon Kindle. So it is called Remember When I Had Cancer. I put it in the past tense form, so that it's kind of like, you're going to get through it. Your complete guidebook to chemotherapy. So those are all of the ways that you can reach me.
That's great. And those are also like, the book is something someone could send to someone going through it too. So that's so helpful to know. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you guys. Here. You're amazing.
Yes. You're amazing.
Thank you. You guys are so awesome. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that important conversation with Amanda, and hopefully you'll share it with someone in your life who could benefit from her story and her messages. And if you're liking our episodes, please be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And if you haven't already left a review, it would be so helpful, and just take a couple minutes. It would mean the world. That being said, just remember that even if nothing feels right today, you tuning into this podcast and opening your mind is enough. Change doesn't happen overnight, so be patient and kind with yourself, and good things will come. We'll see you next time.